Hello, Lifebookers from around the world. Thank you for tuning in to the Lifebook Member Podcast today. For Emotional Month 2020, I'm your host, Jordan River, and today we have my father, John Butcher, on the line. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Jordan. It's really good to be here. Hello, Lifebookers.
Emotional Month, powerful Emotional Month, loving diving deep into this category. We touch on the importance of each category every month, but I mean, I say it a lot. Emotional Month is so critical to living an extraordinary life, right?
Yeah, they all are for sure. But you know, this category, there's one interesting thing about this category, and that is it's kind of a barometer. Like, I don't think, I'm gonna have to think about this a little bit, but I don't think any other category works this way. If you have your emotional life going on just solid, firing on all cylinders, if you are happy and content and fulfilled most of the time, that's a barometer. You're crushing life. You're just plain crushing life, right?
Right.
Versus you can have $1 billion in the bank, and that doesn't say anything about your level of happiness or your love relationship. You can be a supermodel with a perfect body and still have a disastrous life. You can have $1 billion in the bank and still have a disastrous life. But if you have this category firing on all cylinders, you're doing something right across the board. I mean, the other category, none of the other categories are a barometer all on their own of how you're doing across every other area of your life. This one is the only one that rises to that level in my mind. Character is kind of the same way. If you can just get your character completely going on,
right,
you know, that's a category that may compete with emotion. But let's just put it this way, Jordan. This category is such an incredibly important category. If we can dial this one in, we have a great life, period.
That's crazy, man. That makes it a good argument for the most important category. I mean, and especially for life bookers, I would say, because
I'm not going there.
Right on.
I won't go to the most important category, but what I will go to is like this. I mean, it's a cause and effect relationship. If you're doing really, really well in every single area of your life, your emotional life is where you can really see that.
Yeah, that's true.
If you're failing across multiple important areas of your life, that's going to show up in your emotional life too. And of course, every category works this way. It's the math between these categories is infinite. It's incomprehensible. But suffice it to say that this category is one that deserves a heck of a lot of attention.
That's absolutely right. Especially for life bookers, because for many life bookers, the end result of their life book, you know, kind of their sum total of their life vision is happiness for themselves and for their loved ones, satisfaction, overall joy and bliss on a daily basis. Is it that crucial to keep happiness as the main goal?
Well, you know, Aristotle said that happiness is the meaning and the purpose of life, the entire aim and end of human existence. That's one of the smartest people who has ever lived. And that statement could not be more powerful. I mean, It's like everything. This is what we're here for. So I do think that it's incredibly, I mean, everyone's different. Some people will focus more on duty than their own internal happiness. Some people will focus more on accomplishments.
Right.
Right? We're all different. I always hesitate to put a big blanket generalization over everyone.
So true.
But clearly, happiness is one of the things that we should really, really be seeking. And the attainment of happiness on a consistent basis, it's basically a spiritual accomplishment in my mind.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think there's a common thread through the different examples you just gave. You know, when we have Dr. Joel Wade on, we're having him on for Emotional Month. He talks about Aristotle, in fact, and that whole school of thought, and the word that they would use for happiness was eudaimonia. And it wasn't necessarily how we use happiness. It was translated to a lot of different things, but success at living and the good life and a good life. And he talks about having a life you can be proud of, more of an underlying ongoing satisfaction, kind of like a homeostasis of satisfaction. You know what I mean? Do you agree with that?
I not only agree with that, I think that Joel is the leading expert in this field. I mean, his course and book, Mastering Happiness, and he worked with Devers Brand and Nathaniel's wife. She believed in the discipline of happiness. Happiness takes when it takes courage, it takes consistent right action. It just doesn't show up unless you do certain things. And Joel and Nathaniel and Devers kind of worked together. And Joel went very, very deep into what happiness takes to create and maintain. And everything that you just said, Jordan, is completely dialed in. I believe all that.
I know you had some issues with self-esteem in your past. What can you say to those with that struggle with self-esteem, those who struggle with the feeling that they maybe don't deserve happiness?
Yeah, well, that is absolutely a self-esteem issue. Nathaniel Brandon defines self-esteem as a two-part experience. The experience of being competent to cope with the basic challenges of life, which speaks to your confidence, and the experience of being worthy of happiness. So literally,
wow,
being worthy of happiness is built into the definition of self-esteem, according to the widely recognized pioneer in that field. And what I would say is, if you truly have something deep down in, you know, a Brule, a lousy, disempowering belief that was probably put there in childhood or however your life went, and you really believe that you're not deserving of happiness, that's a deep and important and incredibly destructive thing that needs to be addressed. And my recommendation would be to do the study that you need to do to release that horrendously limiting belief. So there's Joel Wade, Mastering Happiness is one of my number one recommendations. Marissa Peer has done some incredible work around, you know, you aren't enough. Marissa has done some really great work around being worthy. And of course, Nathaniel Brandon's books. Specifically, I think in this case, Honoring the Self is a book that it reads a little more like a textbook than some of his some more popular books, but it is a barn burner. And that book is about really getting in touch with the child within and getting to that place where you understand that you were put here to be happy and you are deserving of happiness.
Did you kind of go through that when you had your self-esteem crisis?
No, I didn't.
You didn't have that half of it. Well, yeah, please.
It was the other half, Jordan. It was the other half of the definition of self-esteem. I lost my experience being competent to cope with the basic challenges of life. I couldn't even get behind the wheel of a friggin' car.
Oh, wow.
I never, ever lost the experience of being deserving of happiness, which is why I worked so friggin' hard to get over that issue. I worked for 8 years. I did everything there was to do. I did everything that was available at the time. That I was going to. There is no way I was going to live like that. My sense of being deserving of happiness is what pulled me through that incredible time. It's like, no, this is not what I was put here for. This is not how I'm going to live. I am going to solve this problem, no matter how long it takes, no matter what distance I have to cover, no matter what mountain I've got to climb. This ain't going to be my story. So that being deserving of happiness was what pulled me through. Where I was having trouble at that point was I had no competence to cope with the basic challenges of life. I was my entire physiological, emotional system was just knocked sideways. And I really had to, you know, it took me a long time to heal from that.
That's an incredible drive, that feeling to deserve happiness. And we all deserve that drive. I mean, just by nature that you are human, by nature that you're existing now at the same time as your peers, as you and I, as listening to my voice right now, everyone deserves that drive, I think. And I also want to touch on what you just said, which is so funny because you are one of the more competent individuals that I've ever met. You know what I mean? So it's really funny that you would struggle with that so deeply. You were so good at so many things, even that life.
But I lost it all. I lost it. Like yes, of course I had it. I was a superhero. I ran. You know, I was a young, talented CEO. I did so much stuff. I was so successful across so many areas of my life. And then I had a massive anxiety disorder come out of left field and completely flatten me. And I lost all my competence. I couldn't do business meetings anymore. I couldn't even go to the frigging grocery store.
Wow.
I had full-blown agoraphobia. I lost my ability to function,
wow,
basically. But it was my sense of life. It was my sense that this isn't my story. This is a temporary thing that's happening to me that I'm going to figure out. There's no friggin' way I'm living like this. No way. I'm going to either solve this problem or die trying.
That's so crazy,
it was,
man.
Being deserving of happiness that pulled me through. I'm so grateful for that.
Because look at the chain of events, because that led to you working on your emotional health and dialing in your physical health and compiling those very first collection of personal development notes that eventually would lead to your first version of Life Book,
yep,
which eventually you would show to the powerful and great Herbie, who would look at you and say, you need to bring this to the world. Like, that, what an incredible chain of events. Stemming from an agoraphobic episode.
unfriggin' believable. It's, you know, our deepest pain can often yield the most amazing gifts that we're given in life.
Man, that's so powerful. I want to swing it back around here and ask you about something. We've had this conversation. You know, we have really interesting dinner conversations in the Butcher household, and we've had this conversation before, and it's always stuck with me. You've done a really great kind of riff on the idea of selfishness before. And a lot of people label pursuing your own happiness sometimes in your life as kind of selfish. I want you to speak on selfishness versus selflessness, how we view selfishness, and is it always even a bad thing?
Well, first of all, let's just remember what Aristotle and a lot of amazing thinkers have said about pursuing your own happiness. It's the meaning and purpose of life. Mm-hmm. It's what we're put here for. It's the whole aim and end of human existence. And here's what I get where you're going with this, Jordan, and I just want to replace one word.
Sure.
Because the word selfish is the word selfish has massive negative connotations, and in my mind, that word has been corrupted.
Right.
And what I'd like to do is I'd like to answer your question, but substitute the word selfish with the term enlightened self-interest. It's about my self-interest, right?
Yes.
But it's an enlightened self-interest, which means I want a lot, okay? That's what selfish is about, being greedy, being grabby, collecting, I want, I want, I want. Well, enlightened self-interest says, I want to be all that I can be. I want to have the best life I can possibly have. I don't necessarily need to collect, you know, a million little pieces of gold coins like right. Scrooge McDuck, and right. That's not what it's about. It basically is about self-actualization.
Right.
And that, to me, is what enlightened self-interest means. I want to live an expansive life. I want to live a self-actualized life. I want to take what I've been given and use it to the best of my ability to become the most that I can be for myself and the people around me. I want to live the best possible life that I can live. And how do you do that? You do that by pursuing the things that make you happy. You do that, you know, Sadhguru, this new guy that's on the internet that has, he's just crushing it. He's a literal Indian guru. And he has these just 10-minute videos, like hundreds of them, and he's pretty dialed in. He basically said that the path to enlightenment and the path to self-actualization is the same thing. Mm. That's what you're here for. You're here to learn more about yourself and to express yourself fully. And one of the most important ways that you do that is by figuring out what makes you truly happy and fulfilled and bringing more of those things into your life. Mm. So that's the kind of conversations you can have when you get rid of a word that's been so corrupted and that has so much baggage around it, like selfishness.
Totally.
I just talked about selfishness, about, well, enlightened self-interest, about wanting the best for yourself. That's what selfishness is. But unfortunately, you know, selfishness in the petty sense mm-hmm. is about greedy, grabbing, all that, right?
That's exactly right.
Enlightened self-interest is what my mentors taught. Nathaniel Brandon, Ayn Rand, that's my lineage. And I learned early, I learned at the age of 21 when I first read Atlas Shrugged, that the path to enlightened self-interest is the path to self-actualization. And it all also is what makes civilization possible.
Yes.
It's what heals poverty. It's what makes this world a better place for all of us.
I was just going to say that. It works on a macro scale as well, because what society functions better than that of just individuals who are all self-actualizing and fulfilling their individual purposes? That's really the key. The opposite of that is, you know, basically totalitarian regime.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. And the other thing about self-actualization, which you get to through your enlightened self-interest, is that you can't pour from an empty cup. You can't help anyone until you have some, you got to have some wherewithal. You got to have something to give. You got to have done something that allows you to create value for the people around you.
Mm-hmm.
If your thing is contribution, the most important thing you can do is spend a little time taking a look at how do you self-actualize yourself. You need to bring some enlightened self-interest to the table so that you can learn and you can grow and you can fill that cup so that you can then pour it for other people.
That's exactly right.
It all starts with you, man. If you can't make your friggin' bed, you can't help anyone.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And just being conscious of that line, I think that, you know, enlightened folks, conscious folks, life bookers, they know what greediness is. They know what selflessness is. They know those things. You know what I mean?
Yes, I agree.
So it's about having that integrity, I think. Speaking of greediness, though, this is a great question for you to answer. What do you think about the link between money and happiness? I think a lot of people draw a straight line between money and happiness. And I don't know how many examples we have to see of miserable, successful rich people before we get rid of this idea. But don't let me put words in your mouth. I know you've thought a lot about the subject.
I'll tell you, my favorite quote is Ayn Rand, and I've said this quote to you before, Jordan. Money will take you anywhere you want to go, but it will not replace you as the driver. Mm. That's the best quote about money. Money is a friggin' neutral. Money will not make you happy if you are a miserable person. But if you're a happy person to begin with, money will make you happier. Money can do amazing things for you. It can give you freedom. It can give you bandwidth. It can allow you to live an expressive life. It magnifies who you already are. This is what we say at Lifebook. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at your money as the thing that's going to fill the gaps in your character and fill the void in your emotional life and somehow substitute for your love relationship because, you know, it's girl after girl or man after man or whatever, money ain't going to do that for you. It's not going to, it magnifies, it expands. Money is basically, it's stored energy. It's what it is. But if you're a person that's friggin' miserable, what are you going to do with that stored energy? How can that stored energy make you happy? It can't.
That's right.
Whereas if you have worked on yourself and you've worked on your life and you know, Deepak Chopra says that happiness flows from the progressive realization of worthy goals. Well, geez, money really can help a lot when it comes to the progressive realization of worthy goals.
Right.
It can make things go faster. It can make things go stronger, but it's not going to create happiness. There's no way. However, it can make you more happy than you already are if you can get that foothold and get your emotional life under control. It can really expand your happiness because that's what money does. It expands things.
Totally. Happiness is really a mixture, kind of like a soup. And there are some prerequisites. Like a soup isn't a soup without a broth. And I think that the broth is gratitude. And money isn't a necessary ingredient to that soup, but it's one we all like. You know what I mean? It's yeah, a bonus. Sure. You know, it takes it from a vegan soup up to one with a little bit of meat in it. You're like, yeah, bonus.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying. I totally. Think that the gratitude is really the missing piece. That's what differentiates those who really have money and are happy and those who have money and aren't.
I agree. And let me just say something about gratitude, which is this is emotional month. Let's always make sure that we give gratitude its true place, which is the very height, the very, very top of the emotional hierarchy. Gratitude is magic. We say it every time we talk about it. Nothing that we've ever encountered behaves like gratitude. See, here's the thing. Happiness is an effect. You can't go straight to happiness.
Right.
It's a byproduct. It's a response. So what are the things that make you happy? You might say like, you know, dates with Missy always make me happy. The ocean makes me happy. It makes me happy to have money in the bank. It makes me happy to have a good body. These things evoke happiness in me. Well, can't we just get there without doing any of those things? Sure, we can sit down and quiet our minds and bring some gratitude into our lives, but you're still doing something, Jordan. Mm-hmm. You're still doing something. You've always got to do something mm-hmm. to create happiness. It's a byproduct, right? And I guess it's the same with gratitude. Gratitude is a little bit different than happiness in that with gratitude, what you're doing is you're thinking about all of the things that you're thankful for. And what that does is it faces you in the direction of the things you should be happy about.
Mm-hmm. You stimulate your gratitude.
Exactly. And your gratitude should stimulate your happiness.
Yes, precisely. Yeah, that's exactly right. But you're right. It's not like you can't just think happy thoughts and then become happy. That's kind of an insane proposition. But you can think grateful thoughts and become grateful. And that usually leads to an elevated level of happiness, especially if you do it on a regular basis, man.
Yeah, you're 100% right. Happiness is a little tricky.
Yes.
It's mathematically a little tricky. And life bookers, you know, I did this a few years ago. Let me read you a little passage from the emotional chapter in my life book.
Oh, I'm sure the audience would love to hear that.
Okay, so I'm just going to, let me just read a little bit here. Happiness is the ultimate purpose of life. It's the only real success. Happiness is generated from within. Happy people focus on the good things in life most of the time. They think about and do things that make them happy. Unhappy people do just the opposite. They focus on the things that are making them miserable. They do things that make them miserable, and they bring more misery into their lives. One person can be happy in relatively unpleasant circumstances, while another person can be miserable in the best of circumstances. So if you see somebody who's happy most of the time, you can know that you're looking at a true accomplishment there.
Oh, I love that.
Happiness requires consciousness and discipline to create and maintain. So it's up to me to think through what it is that makes me happy and then have the courage to go after that. Because, Jordan, we live in a world of distraction. It's so easy to forget what our main thing should be, right? You got to work on this. Happiness has to be consciously created. It's a state of mind. You have to access it through internal management, and you have to do things in the external world that make it go. So in my life book, I want to take total responsibility for my own happiness. It is not up to someone else. I've listed the things that make me happy, and I will consciously try to do more of those things. I'll consciously cultivate and nurture this, which is my highest emotional value, happiness. And that means I got to study it, and I got to practice it as a discipline. And that's what I'd recommend to the life bookers this month, is just take a look at some YouTube videos, do a couple Google searches, and definitely consume the great content that we're going to have in our members platform this month. Read a little bit about happiness, learn a little bit about happiness. This is a subject that is worth paying some attention to, because at the end of the day, it's one of the most important things in life. It's kind of what we're doing on this planet.
And you know, it's like you said, there are so many distractions. And what that led me to think is there are so few champions of this subject. I mean, who's out there doing this work? Like you and Joel Wade and a select few, you know, the people in Limiting Beliefs, like you mentioned before, Marissa Peer, actually a guest this month. But my point is, think about how many people Pepsi has trying to sell you Pepsi versus how many people are out there trying to remind people to cultivate their own happiness, which is the most important thing.
Jordan, that is a friggin' beautiful point, man. And take a look at our political situation right now. I mean, people are just really, really unhappy.
Right.
They're just completely upset. Everyone's so upset. You're right. Like we have very few champions when it comes to happiness.
Yeah, that's a good point. So that's why I like to help out however I can, help out the cause. You know what I mean?
Well, let's do this, man. Let's just talk about a couple things here that create lasting happiness. And, you know, of course, there's no such thing as lasting happiness, because we don't last. Everything's temporary, right? I don't distinguish between kinds of happiness too much. Mm. Some people say this happiness is fleeting or whatever. There's only one kind of happiness that I do really distinguish between sort of the...
What is that?
The big picture of happiness. Here's what it is. It's the happiness that leads to addiction.
Oh, so it's, yeah.
Anything...
The dopamine rush.
It's the dopamine rush.
Right,
it can be
that is
drugs,
different.
It can be alcohol, it can be gambling, it can be sex, it can be technology. And yes, you are happy in that moment, but here's the distinction. That's going to lead you to a place where you are going to be extremely unhappy versus... Taking a walk by the ocean makes me happy. That will never lead me to a place where I'm going to be an addict or right? So that's something that we really have to watch out for. It's the one, in my mind, it's the one snare that we got to be careful of.
That's true.
Doing that are making us happy. You know, we just got to make sure that it's not the dopamine rush that leads us eventually to a really, really bad place.
Good point, yeah.
But you know, one of Missy's biggest strategies is, well, first of all, she starts her every single morning with her morning walk, and she goes down to the ocean and she does her gratitude ritual. And that's why my wife is probably the happiest person I know.
Oh, my God. Well, that just covered so many bases. Time in nature, gratitude, ritual and routine, which I know is a huge one.
100%. The little varmints are with her. So she's got the dog and the cat down there, and she just does her beautiful feminine thing. And that's why she's so incredibly happy. But here's one of the things that Missy says that we should be focusing on, that we don't focus on enough, that does definitely create happiness. Make sure that you put a lot of time in your life just to have fun. We're here to have fun. I mean, so many of us are so focused on on achievements or on making money or on duty, responsibility, all the drudgery that we're surrounded by, and we forget just to have fun. And that does create happiness. Think about wrestling with Juju, Jordan. Think about all the happiness that we had when you were a kid, just doing, you know, it's just, that's so important. So that's a good strategy.
Yes.
Here's another great strategy for creating happiness. Contrast. Tony Robbins talks about this. I learned this from him. We've been to a lot of very, very poor countries in the world. And our kids have grown up, you know, our kids have grown up knowing that they are so lucky and that they should be so grateful every single day for what they have, because not every country is like America and not every lifestyle is like our lifestyle. And so you can use contrast if you're feeling sorry for yourself, if you're in victim mode, if you're just not experiencing happiness. Just be thankful that you're not living in London in 1341, where 2/3 of the people died from the Black Death. You can use history. You can use other people's, you know, current conditions on this planet. You can use contrast to make yourself feel grateful, even if you can't, you know, plug into it in any other way. So that will work.
Yeah, that's so true.
Isn't that great? And I think a big... Yeah.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I know travel is a huge part of your life, and I'm sure a huge part of your emotional life. It kind of expands your consciousness, your collective consciousness, taps into different regions and really is transforming. Even just once or a few times during a lifetime can completely transform the way you look at life.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, travel is our, when we take a look at the best strategies, single strategies across all 12 categories, there's two that are in a class by themselves that we've discovered. The first is travel. Actually, that's probably the second. The first is meditation.
Meditation.
Meditation literally affects every category positively.
So true.
And travel is another one that is just across the board is amazing.
That's a good point.
One of the way that travel makes me happy is I'm an adventurer on the Enneagram scale. I'm a driver with an adventurer wing. So I do need variety in my life. I can't live a mundane life where I'm doing the same thing every single day. That's a recipe for unhappiness and restlessness and frustration for me. So I do need to get out and see new frontiers and so on. That is one of the ways travel makes me happy. Mm-hmm. But travel makes a lot of people happy in different ways. Some people love the culinary aspect of travel, or the art aspect of travel, or the nature aspect, or the cultural aspect.
Novelty, right? and exploration and further connection, expansiveness, all of that is very, very satisfying.
Absolutely. And then, of course, I'm going to just reiterate Deepak's definition. Well, he says it's not a definition. He says that happiness, it extends from the progressive accomplishment of worthy goals. Mm-hmm. And if we're living in our life books, and if we're clear on our life vision, and if we're setting our goals against our life vision, and if we're performing the small daily choices and actions, our habits on a daily basis that is turning us into the person that gets a life like that, well, we're all experiencing the progressive accomplishment of worthy goals. Mm-hmm. And proud of ourselves, and that should make us happy.
We're doing it, man. That's exactly right. Absolutely. Well, listen, man, here's a good time for this question for you. I know there's a lot of new life bookers out there, and I don't know how much you've covered your personal story in the most recent iteration of the Lifebook program. So I wanted to ask you this here on the podcast. You've had a crazy, crazy wild ride, ups and downs in your life. I mean, for all the way back from your childhood and, you know, the struggles and good times, I'm sure there, but you've told stories about, you know, running away with your brother and living in a shack and shooting rats with BB guns and eating cinnamon rolls off the sidewalk and knocking the bugs off them. So like, and you've made companies that have made millions and, you know, billions of dollars, and some that have lost similar amounts. And looking back on your wild ride of a life, when were you at your happiest, and how did those ups and downs correlate and affect your happiness?
Oh, that's an awesome question. It has been an absolutely wild ride. It's been like the agony and the ecstasy, for sure. But I'll tell you, this is so interesting, Jordan, because Miss and I have been talking about this for months. I've never been happier in my life than I am right now.
Oh, that's
Missy
great.
And I. True, Missy and I have never been happier in our entire lives than we are right now. And, you know, we were talking about that probably, I don't know, months ago. And we just looked at each other and we're like, wow, then that's really saying something for us, Jordan.
Right.
That's saying something for us. Because we have focused so much time. We've done so much. We've experienced so much. We've had so much joy and so much happiness. And yes, we're human beings, which means we've had pain and frustration and angst too. But to be able to say right now that we've never been happier is, to me, that's an absolute testimonial for the Lifebook process right there, because Lifebook is what got us here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just so incredibly grateful for that.
That's incredible, man. That's really great to hear. And honestly, I feel the same way. I mean,
I was just going to say, I know you do.
I also feel like I've always been kind of an old soul. So like as a kid, I was like,
you
ready,
are.
I was ready to be older. But now that I am, man, it's
amazing wife. You've got the
right.
most amazing daughter.
The
your career,
perfect
you're
daughter.
Your career, you're healthy. I mean, yeah, man, you're a shining example of what bringing consciousness and self-responsibility into your life in a loving way and using this Lifebook process where you can take your life at a young age. I'm double your age.
Well, that's the thing, man. You raised me with it. Like, it's instilled in my thought process. It's not even so much that I go back and hit my Lifebook three times a day. It's that it's within me. At a certain point, it becomes part of you. It becomes part of your character, you know? And that's what happens when you have us do family dinners every night and you talk about this stuff at the table.
So let's just make sure that we encourage all the Lifebookers out there to start doing that, because boy, does it pay off. I'm so proud of all you kids. You're all just... You know, and it's not like we had, it was like we were living our lives. We were setting the best example we could. And that's the most important thing you can do, because you can't be there for every decision your kid's going to make. You know, they've got to be able to do it on their own. And the best way they can do it on their own is if they grow up just surrounded by the radiation from this type of a process.
Yes.
Where you're constantly focused on your self-actualization. You're constantly focused on being the best version of you can be, creating the best life you can create, helping the people around you do the same. It's as good as it gets in my book.
It's the work, man. It's the work for your kids, for your spouse, for your neighbor, for your community, most importantly, for yourself. I'm going to say it most importantly, for yourself. So that's why I love being a part of this. That's right.
Well, I love it, man.
Thank you, man. Love you.
All right, JB. Love you too, man. This was a great talk.
All right, everyone listening out there, thank you for tuning in. I hope you're having an incredible time crafting your life vision, achieving your life vision. Best of luck out there, folks. This is Jordan River and John Butcher signing off, saying have an extraordinary day. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast.